microphone boost.
Yes.
20 decibels.
Unlocked. Did you have to kill like 50 guys before you got the microphone unlocked?
Yeah.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 217 for April 1st, 2010. On today's show, the internet explodes with gaming April Fool's gags, Heroes of New Earth hits open beta, NVIDIA's new hotness arrives, and more. Hi, gang. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and on today's show, we've got Evan Lottie.
Hello there. Happy Thursday.
Eric, Eric Belsas.
Howdy.
And Andy Bauman.
What's up, guys?
It is my sincere hope today that this podcast will be a shining beacon of truth on a day otherwise filled with filthy, filthy lies.
Why is that?
Because as you may have heard at the top of the show, this is April Fool's Day, which means nothing you see or hear on the internet is generally true, except for maybe that statement. But there have been a lot of good April Fool's gags out there, from the obviously fake ones from Blizzard and BioWare and everybody else. Have you guys seen any good ones that stand out?
Blizzard seems to go all out every year, and I'm not sure if this year is better or worse than last year. I'm trying to remember everything they did last year, but Eric and I were fans of the... they basically made a Match.com-like advertisement about their matchmaking service through Battle.net for StarCraft II. So they're saying, they had like these professional people sort of sharing anecdotes like it was a dating service and saying, like, I need somebody that's in my league that understands how to micro. One of the people says, I need a man that knows how to micro or something like that. It's pretty cute.
The Blizzard does, can actually claim to have had matchmaking happen over their services. A lot of WoW weddings out there, right?
Yeah, I guess. I've heard a few.
Yeah, I guess maybe not a lot, but a few. It has happened. They also did over at in the Diablo side of the biz. They've got like a Diablo like enchanted snuggie merchandise, and also a what's the name of the character in Diablo who does
Deckard Cain.
Yeah. Deckard Cain. Yeah, they've got a voice for him on GPS. They've got a couple of sound samples from that. Saying the red light ahead it marks a spot of great danger and stuff like that.
Pretty good.
Eric, you were talking about the Dragon Age ones, right?
Yeah. I think BioWare, I don't think anyone really knew these were coming, but they've released actual kind of silly DLC. It's paid DLC. And you get kind of funny little gift items that have animations and stuff associated with them. So like you can give your dog a cone like they would get, after you visit a vet or whatever, and it lowers his approval of you and he'll wear that around. Or you can give like Morrigan a Alistair voodoo doll that she plays with. A few funny things like that. Obviously they put some work into it. So, $3 for, I don't know, it's like 20 items or something. That's not too bad, but it's a funny prospect.
And charging for April Fool gags is something we haven't seen before, I don't think. But it's not an unreasonable price. I'm not like insulted by it. It's not something that everybody would absolutely want in their game. So I can see why they would go that route with it. Not terribly offended by it. Is anybody terribly offended by that prospect?
Not really.
Not really. No.
How do you guys how are you guys looking up all these jokes? Shouldn't you be working and stuff?
No.
I haven't had time all day to look up this stuff.
No, we generally keep an eye on blogs and news releases, and we get some sent straight to our email. For example, the Civilization V one was pretty funny. They have extreme diplomacy mode, which the screenshots they mocked up are like like Washington, George Washington fighting Queen Elizabeth, or who they've got in that screenshot. He's fighting
Oda Nobunaga or something.
He's a Japanese leader, yeah. I suppose. He's got glowing green blades, and Washington is casting a We the People spell.
Yeah.
And
his power up ability is called Uncle Slam.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some clever stuff.
Awesome.
So you know, what we do, you know, keep an eye on all the gaming blogs and, you know, for up to the minute news. And that's where we see most of the coverage. This one isn't necessarily April Fool's related, but it's the best thing I've seen all day and possibly in the past several months. If you go to YouTube and search for a law-abiding engineer, have you seen this, Andy?
No, this just sounds funny.
Yeah. So somebody took a trailer for a movie called A Law-Abiding Citizen and replaced most of the cast with Team Fortress 2 characters. And it looks astonishingly good. I don't know if he made his own models or if Valve makes those really high quality models available, but you know that they're it's really good facial animation and you know, he just superimposes these guys over the live action cast and gets all the lighting right, and it just looks fantastic, and it's hilarious too. So I highly recommend that. Evan, you've seen it, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing the guy did it in Gary's Mod or something, because he has all that fancy lip sync for the voice parts, which is excellent. And it's just so extensive and hilarious, and it kind of buys into the existing TF2 fiction of, you know, the spy has a certain role and the engineer has a certain role and certain character traits that you expect of him. And the way they're played out is perfect within the trailer. It's really sinister and ridiculous.
But do you think it was? I don't know if it was done in Gary's Mod. I don't know if Gary's Mod has models that are that high quality. I mean, especially if you look at the high def YouTube video, these are really high quality models.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's using certain filters or something, or like a higher res texture pack. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's seamless. It's not just like the characters are sort of cardboard cutouts that pop up over the trailer. They're integrated very seamlessly, yeah.
Yeah, and this guy ought to get hired at, you know, Pixar or Valve, for that matter.
Give us the name of this again.
It's called A Law-Abiding Engineer.
Oh, okay.
It's really well done.
Yeah, terrific. Terrific machinima.
So in other news, Heroes of New Earth, which is another Defense of the Ancients kind of style of game, similar to League of Legends, similar to Demigod in some ways, just went into open beta yesterday. So anybody who wants to play it now can. It was a pretty widely distributed closed beta before, but now you can just go to heroesofnewearth.com, sign up, and you can play it for free. And I guess at launch it'll be like $30, but for now at least you can get a hold of it for free. And Eric, you've played some of it, right?
Yeah, I've played a bit. Obviously the thing you're going to compare it to the most is Dota, the Warcraft 3 mod, and League of Legends. Not too long ago it was launched.
League of Legends is free though, right?
League of Legends is free and it has microtransactions. Right. I'm not sure about the pricing structure going into Heroes of New Earth. Heroes of New Earth is a very fast-paced, much more unforgiving, probably closer to the original Defense of the Ancients type of game. It's where most of the community that was really that played a lot of Defense of the Ancients on Warcraft 3, they've migrated there because it's a very, very similar conversion down to the items at the stores, and most of the heroes have just kind of been converted and named differently almost. So it's a very authentic experience. It's very fast paced. The community is very tight knit, but it's very hard to get into. Because if you don't know what you're doing, everyone on your team is just going to yell at you. At least in my experience, that's what it was, because I had no idea what I was doing. But it seems like a very well built game, and anyone who's interested in that Defense of the Ancients, click. It's definitely, I think, the one to check out for the most competitive play.
So, like League of Legends is the one that's more accepting of new players.
It seems to me, because League of Legends introduced quite a few new concepts along with the Dota-style gameplay. So everyone was kind of learning, and they're still introducing new heroes and stuff, so everyone's still kind of learning. It seems to be, in my experience, a much friendlier environment to play in for someone who's not as well-versed.
And in League of Legends, I think they actually have like some community, like they actively encourage people to you know, give new players kind of a helping hand. Whereas like the vibe I get from the Heroes of New Earth thing is it's more of an exclusive club kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
Maybe cut your teeth for free on League of Legends and then dip into New Earth. That's probably the order of operations there. Do you guys think that with these two, you know, dedicated games that were actually produced to have this style of gameplay or conceived of to have this style of gameplay, do you think that they will eclipse the Defense of the Ancients and like sap away that entire community? Or will people be playing Defense of the Ancients till the end of time?
I think they will. I mean, simply for
they will which?
Eclipse, yeah. I think the fact that they have just dedicated developer support. I mean, League of Legends has rolled out a new map earlier this week. They've rolled out probably five new champions, playable characters in the time since they've come out. And if you think back to Dota, it was really relying on a couple guys at first to roll out patches and balancing stuff. And, you know, just buying into a new game with regular content and regular updates, I think that's a place people want to be in. Besides, how long has it been around? Like, people have got to be ready for something new, slightly new.
Defense of the Ancients has been around since, you know, shortly after Warcraft 3, the expansion, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's a fairly old game. But I mean, at the same time, like, you still get people playing Counter-Strike 1 over Counter-Strike Source just because, you know, they are so used to that and they just won't let go of it. Isn't Counter-Strike, is Counter-Strike Source the most played game on Steam or Counter-Strike, vanilla, like, original?
So, we can't say for certain what the most played game is, but, I mean, regularly, in terms of peak users, which you can view at store.steampower.com/stats, Modern Warfare 2 is up there at the top regularly, but in terms of players per game, at their peak, Counter-Strike Source is almost always number two, and Counter-Strike 1.6 is almost always number three. So if you put them together, they eclipse Modern Warfare 2.
Right, but I mean, just the fact that Counter-Strike, the original Counter-Strike has such a strong following, because I guess, you know, when you're that into something, any change at all is just going to throw you off, and half the people are going to adopt the change, and half are going to just resist it and stick with what they know. It's really interesting, you know, behavior to watch, like a hardcore community like that when presented with an opportunity to go to a new thing. And I think you're going to see a similar thing with StarCraft 2 when that comes out. Like, a lot of people are just going to stick with StarCraft.
You think so? Really?
I mean, a lot of the hardcore community. I mean, I'm sure they're all going to get StarCraft 2, but I'm sure a lot of them aren't going to like it as much as StarCraft 1, and they're just going to stick with that. And it's very similarly to Counter-Strike versus Counter-Strike Source.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely imagine they'll have their own complaints or nitpicks about balancing or certain parts of design. But for a competitive player, like, just the chance at prestige in being in that gold league and having all your stats tracked, and I wouldn't pass that up.
Well, I mean, if you're a competitive StarCraft player and, you know, you're at the top of your game and StarCraft 2 comes out, and like, you know, a bunch of people move over there, you have to kind of retrain yourself in StarCraft 2, and while you're doing that, you're basically losing some of your StarCraft 1 training, right? So you'd be sacrificing your position at the top of StarCraft 1 in order to get, you know, have a shot at StarCraft 2. You know, who knows? I'm sure some people are going to stick with the first one.
Yeah,
that's their primary game anyway.
It'll be interesting to see how the community responds. I mean, it's already kind of been a historic situation with the beta, where we've seen professional leagues and you know, game replay videos and those type of people that produce that content, producing it based on the beta, you know, over and over and over again. There's all these competitive matches that are being broadcast through the beta, and tutorial videos and things like that. Even, you know, even though the balancing could change here and there, it's pretty astonishing that all that has come out of just the beta.
Yeah, all the hardcore stuff is just tweaked all over the like all the really in-depth strategy. Every time they change like the regeneration rate of a roach, it would completely throw all that off. Like all their really hardcore strategy stuff would go out the window. But anyway, so speaking of companies that cater to hardcore communities, I was reading online today that DICE was saying that in response to Infinity Ward selling a map pack for Modern Warfare 2 is what, $15 for 5 maps?
Yes. Right. A crime.
Right. So and DICE was coming out and saying, you know, we would never charge for maps. And they just put out some new maps too for Bad Company 2, didn't they?
Yes, the VIP map pack is finally available.
Yeah. I mean, right. It was basically old maps with different modes, am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, that's true. You are correct.
Yeah,
but so, you know they're releasing new content for free.
Kind of.
the same content you've played with a different mode attached to it.
Yes,
for free. That is new content.
It counts. Yeah.
Well, it's basically what they're charging for because Modern Warfare 2 is selling maps for COD 4 with the stimulus package. Well, two of the five. So yeah.
Then just like with the dedicated servers issue where Modern Warfare came out, it was, you know, saying we're not going to do that, and then. Bad Company comes out and DICE says, you know, we would never get rid of dedicated servers. That's a, you know, huge thing for us. We love PC gamers. I mean, it seems like DICE is becoming like the anti-Infinity Ward. They're trying to. It's probably not something they planned. It's probably something that just kind of developed as they kind of stayed the course and stuck with what they know people like. Whereas Infinity Ward is trying, you know, new things that people don't necessarily like, but mean. Like, but could potentially mean more profitable business for them. That it seems like DICE is capitalizing on that, and in a PR perspective, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. And based on, again, on the Steam sales charts, I guess right now Battlefield has been number one on there for several weeks, and Modern Warfare is declining, down to six this week. But I mean it. Obviously sold a bunch of copies. It's not, I don't think Battlefield is going to outsell Modern Warfare, but they are staying strong on there.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see it throughout DICE. It's definitely not just EA. DICE wants to perpetuate the sense of a rivalry to some extent. You know, it probably began when we received word that Modern Warfare 2 wouldn't support dedicated servers. And then they sort of saw a marketing opportunity to say, "Hey, we're coming out in a few months. We're going to have dedicated servers." But it's, you know, within the campaign itself, excuse me, they do kind of go out of their way a couple times to poke. I don't even know if it's fun, but they make fun of like the heartbeat sensor attachment at one point that you have in Modern Warfare 2, and they sort of make light of it as like a girly accessory or something on a weapon. But in practice, I don't know, do we think like these games or the way these two companies, the products they create and the services they create within those products are fundamentally different or really that distinct?
Well, I mean, it is a philosophical difference in the companies. You know, DICE is definitely going to, you know, at least to portray themselves and accurately in these cases as a more populist kind of company. It's like they care more about their customers, what they're saying. You know, stick with us, we'll treat you better.
Well, I agree with you to an extent. I think there's still, I'm having a lot of problems with, I mean, not that this shows a lack of caring on DICE's part, but my server browser is still super, like, broken. My friends, I can't get any of my friend list features to work inside the game, and it's, you know, but that doesn't really affect my love of the game. I still love the game because the gameplay is so great, but still, you know, it's not necessarily showing they're going above and beyond.
Well, yeah, but Andy, either you know, broken server browser is better than no server browser, right?
You are correct, sir. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely made, I don't know, I'm not sure what the best way of describing it, Andy. You've probably played a little bit more BC2 of late than me, but DICE certainly made an effort to say, hey, we care about the PC. There is a server browser,
yeah,
as broken as the play now button is, and that sometimes, most of the time will say, oh, you wanted to play on a random server? It's full. Well, why did you direct me to a full server, you dumbass? The weapon customization selection screen, your specialization screen is nice. But other than that, the pings almost always seem off.
They're never accurate.
There's not a developer console. What else? I mean, I'm trying to remember their exact comments about mods. They've sort of said, hey, we really like mods, but oh, right. Battlefield, that company too won't support it.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I'd be surprised if they didn't charge for their next set of DLC.
Yeah, it is kind of like an EA mandate that you have DLC for all games at this point. I'm sure there will be something. Yeah. And going back to like Battlefield 2, they had a bunch of small expansions.
Yep.
That you could buy and download, which was kind of DLC. You know.
Isn't that how they launched the EA Online Store? The EA Store they launched with one of the expansions, if I remember correctly.
I think you may be right. Yeah.
Interesting.
But you're absolutely right. The Battlefield has had no shortage of problems. But I mean, if you look at Modern Warfare by comparison, overrun by hackers, ping problems right and left. It's kind of a similar situation on both sides of the fence. You definitely have a point that it's not necessarily the very highest of quality products, but it seems to be about on par. Battlefield and DICE are basically still, they want you to get the impression that you're being taken care of better by the, free content and by the feature that you really want, the dedicated servers.
Yeah.
I mean, from a personal standpoint, I think the multiplayer in Battlefield 2 hits my spot a little bit more than the multiplayer in Modern Warfare 2. But, Modern Warfare 2 had Spec Ops, whereas Bad Company 2 doesn't have any cool little side feature like that. So, it's a toss-up.
Speaking of some multiplayer stuff, that Mountain Blade Warband came out this week, which was an expansion or a separate game, Evan?
I mean, you can think of it as a standalone multiplayer release.
So it is to Mountain Blade as Multiwinia is to Darwinia.
Absolutely, that's an apt comparison. So Mountain Blade, again, you might have played it. The original one is a, gosh, what's the best way of describing it? Sort of like an open kingdom RPG where you're a guy on a horse that can become a ruler over time by conquering different kingdoms and recruiting people. And
it's a third-person action game, right?
Yeah, it can technically be first-person, but yeah, third-person action game, medieval war combat. Really, like the only medieval action game I can think of that's come out in the past, I don't know, 5 or so years. But yeah, Warband basically adds multiplayer to that, up to 64 players, which I haven't tested myself, but on the surface is very exciting in terms of siege warfare and archery and things like that, and cavalry, and I'm really looking forward to jumping on my horse and getting into that.
Very literally speaking, I suppose.
No.
Jumping on the horse, yeah.
No, and there's actually, we'll let you guys know as soon as we know, but we're probably going to get a few servers for Warband set up to play on and have some game nights in there. So,
dude,
I'll keep you posted. Yeah,
is it really that compelling of an experience?
It's. I mean, if you just Google or jump on the YouTube and look up Mountain Blade. Sorry, my phone's ringing. I mean, the type of war play that's happening, it's funny. It almost fits the way the game is designed. It's messy in both circumstances, in both ways. The collision detection is really hard to read and understand. The animation system is wacky. The engine is really dated. But at the same time, it'll probably run at like 180 frames for you. it's a really messy kind of lower budget game in that way. But at the same time, it's a fun experience to just fight against hordes of 50, 60 guys and just whack, swing your sword at them and just kind of swing mercilessly and see who goes down. There's a lot of funny cool. There's a lot of funny other mechanics. I've been playing a Star Wars mod of the original recently. I'll talk about that in playlists, but like you can just the in the single player version, it's completely open in terms of what can take place. So you can betray people, you can marry people to acquire like diplomacy points, and it's just like a fun, very PC game in that way. I guess it's completely unscripted and open and messy, admittedly, but a good time.
Yeah, it's cool. It's not big on polish, but kind of well executed for, you know, for what the amount of resources they appear to have had versus, you know, what came out. It's
yeah, definitely, and absolutely helped by the fact that there's really nothing else like it out there.
Yeah, it's like Arma for the horseback crowd.
Yeah,
just kidding. But that's, it does sound pretty uniquely PC, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that will not be coming out, sadly, is the Stargate Worlds MMO. Cheyenne Mountain, the company that was working on that project, is in the process of being liquidated. Mm. There were apparently all kinds of wacky financial shenanigans going on. There are a few stories out there about like the CEO having a history of kind of shady deals. Yeah, I'm not in a position to be able to say whether that is true or not, but the end result is there will be no Stargate MMO in the near future, which makes me a little bit sad because I have been watching Stargate on Hulu. It has been my goal to finish watching it before they take them all down on, I think, May 15th. They take them all down. That's one of the annoying things about Hulu is they'll put up like an entire series, but only for a limited time. So it's like I feel compelled to watch it all before they take it down.
Well, yeah, I mean, DVD box sales for those series, you got to imagine they want to keep those up.
Right.
So,
but I don't know. I don't really want to buy a DVD box set of something like that. I'll just watch once, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, kind of beside the point. they did release, though, as kind of a spinoff of this game, they released Stargate Resistance, which was kind of a very mediocre team-based shooter. As it seemed like they were trying to, you know, release something to get a little bit of income. That project was kind of spun off into a side company, so that is still intact. And you know, it'll still be supported, which is good. I mean, it sucks for anybody who bought a game, you know, a month or two ago to have the company go out of business and have no more support for it. So, you know, that's the silver lining, I suppose. Eric, you played some of Stargate Resistance, right?
Yeah. I reviewed it in our Fallout New Vegas issue, I believe. Mm-hmm. Decidedly generic, kind of unbalanced, kind of unpolished. But if you're really craving it does Stargate pretty well. Like, the universe is there. So if you're really craving it, it might fix you.
Because there's something wrong with people that are craving Stargate. Is that the idea?
Can't get enough of that James Spader.
He was in the movie, and yeah, okay.
Oh right, I forget there's a whole like side universe. Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I know, like the movie and the show were kind of separate. Like, kind of separate. I mean, the show kind of picked up where the movie left off, but they kind of hinted that it was kind of a separate, like an alternate universe kind of thing, because like they spell some characters' names differently, and yeah. But anyway, and finally, we want to cover the announcement and launch of the NVIDIA 4 series, the GTX 480 and 470 were just announced at PAX East. And ours actually just showed up today for testing. Eric, what do the early numbers show for some preliminary tests before we get ours in?
Well, looking around, just sort of what people are saying and testing it, it's testing about 10% faster than the 5870, the sort of ATI. Flagship card right now. It's interesting to note, though, that the GTX 480 at a full run drains 375 watts. And outputs enough heat to probably keep your apartment warm during the winter, it sounds like. We'll have more stats after I've kind of gone through all the tests and stuff next week. But I don't know. It's not looking maybe as promising as I was thinking they were.
Hmm. Yeah, do you know what the power consumption on the 5870 is?
It's like 90. Excuse me.
At idle. Full bore, the 5870, about 300 max it's looking. So
it's not like a massive difference, but it's significant. I mean, that's like a 25% increase.
Mm-hmm.
So how big is the card itself? Is it, because I remember the 5870 is kind of pushed the limit.
It's a 12.1 inch card, which is comparable to the 5970.
Yep, that's huge.
It won't fit in mid cases very well.
Don't run out and get one to put in your shuttle.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Dang.
But the price is not, it's not very competitively priced, is it?
It is priced at around $500. Your 5870 goes for about $380 right now. So it's a significant amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, unless the numbers really kind of, you know, turn in the 480's favor at this point. I mean, I just switched from a GTX 285 to a 5870. I don't have really feel any burning desire to switch up to a massively power hungry, really hot card, a more expensive one. I mean, for a minor boost.
Yeah, and people are saying the 10.3 drivers just came out for ATI. They kind of broke some things. I know WoW doesn't work very well in them, but they're offering a fairly significant performance boost in DirectX 11 games like Dirt 2 or
Just Cause.
Just Cause. Like some people are saying up to 10%. So. That would
level that playing field right there.
Yeah, things are pretty competitive, and so it's interesting, you know?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll be doing our own testing in the next week or so, so we will let you know how that shakes out.
Do you guys plan on, let me ask you this, I know it's not directly related to gaming per se, but you know how NVIDIA is going to have a lot of, especially with this new series, they're touting it as like a second, you know, processor to do like really parallel processing stuff like video encoding and stuff. Are you guys going to try and touch on that or just kind of leave that up to Maximum PC and stuff?
I mean, that's generally more Maximum PC's turf. I mean, if there's an interesting gaming application or if it's, you know, something that will really change your life, then we might mention it as a side benefit, but that's the kind of benchmarking that Maximum PC does, where we tend to stick to, you know, strictly in game.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fair enough.
Because that
extra $100, you know, difference could be something. There could be something there with that, like the GPU compute, or you know, whatever.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know, we look at everything with a gamer's eye. So like, I mean, it comes up a lot with like keyboards and mice and stuff like that. If something's like an awesomely comfortable keyboard to use, but it just isn't good for gaming. Then you know it's
what
not
good is it?
Very highly for us. Yeah. Well, and we'll see that in the review. That it actually reminds me of a Microsoft ergonomic keyboard that I really liked that we did a review on several years ago, and in testing it, I found a problem where it just for games if you were just holding down W to move forward. It would every so often just forget that you're holding that key down.
Wow. So
you would be walking along and it would seem like you just hit a wall because your character would just stop moving.
Oh my gosh.
And you would have to release the key and push it again to play it, or, you know, to play around. So, and like Microsoft at the time had no idea that problem existed. So you know, I was doing their QA for them, I guess, but, But you know, so it was a great keyboard for any other purpose, but for gaming, it was worthless.
Yeah, that's so. You have two attached at once, and you have your recon kit and then your medic kit, and that's, you have to switch back and forth like that.
Right. So anyway, on to some questions.
thank you so, so much for letting me know that Torchlight was only $5 this weekend. This game is awesome. Thank you so much.
Jordan Sweet, you're very welcome.
That's awesome.
We love promoting that game. I've probably spent 35 or 40 hours playing it. And for $5, I mean, that's a ridiculously good deal.
That's a lot of time for this year when you have to really be like planning your event calendar for games because there's so many of them.
Well, it was last year that I was playing it.
Oh, yeah, still the end of the year.
Yeah. I do kind of avoid playing it right now because I know I'll get sucked back in and play a bunch more.
Hey guys, I just wanted to comment on the whole Just Cause 2 direct extension. So I think you guys are pretty spot on that. But what I think a lot of people miss out on is that DirectX 10, no matter what the advertising campaigns may have said, it's not really a customer-focused thing, you know? Anything possible in DX9, or anything possible in DX10 can also be done in DX9. It's just easier for developers to implement it in DX10 for the most part. And with DX10, it was slower at first, but as drivers matured and as the API matured and everything, like you look at Far Cry 2, it looks identical in DX10 as it does in DX9, but it performs faster. So I think with Just Cause 2, they just outweighed the marketing benefit. They said, hey, yeah, we might lose some sales, but it's cheaper for us to develop it, so we want DX10 only. So, I don't know. I think it's the same thing with Shattered Horizon, actually. Just thought I'd offer a little bit more insight into this. Thanks for the podcast. Keep up.
That is a terrific point. Now he's jogged my memory, that was mentioned as you know, one of the benefits is that it is easier and less performance hungry or system hoggy to do certain features, like if you have like if you want to do a flock of birds, it's easier it sucks up less performance cycles to do something like that, or things like smoke and other environmental effects. So I mean that's a very good point. We did neglect to mention that last time.
So it wasn't so much that the God rays looked better, but it's that they were easier on the board as far as resource management.
Right. And you know, after Crysis came out, like people proved that you could enable all those effects, all the DX10 effects in DX9 mode.
Now I remember that too.
But that was because of what he's talking about here, is that you can do all that. It just kills your performance.
This is TJ from Kansas again. I'm calling, to ask, you've answered questions similar to this before, but my friends and I have started playing StarCraft again quite a bit in preparation. We're, you know, getting excited about StarCraft 2 again. The thing is, we all kind of suck, and I was wondering, do you guys have any tips on how to just get, like, that little bit of an edge? I don't need to be pro good or Korean good or anything like that, but how would you recommend somebody to just be good enough to beat a bunch of other people who suck at RTS, cheap tricks, stuff like that? If you could share those with me and not with any of my friends, that would be great. And keep making an awesome podcast. Bye.
Meet us in the alley behind the store. No. the number one way to do that, in my experience, has been to download and watch replays of people who are better than you playing.
Yes.
And just, you know, just pick up on some strategies they do. And, you know, if you download like the replays of like the pro players, you might pick up something on build orders, but so much of what they do is based on like ultra micromanagement and getting a mutilist to dance back and forth so that it's a moving target and firing. And it's just so much of that is way above where you need to be. So, I would concentrate on learning new build orders in StarCraft, figuring out how to get your army, up to, you know, fighting strength as quickly as humanly possible. And that's the number one thing. Also, I mean, my biggest tip for StarCraft is scout as much as possible, because if you can see what the other guy is throwing at you and you know how to counter that, you can start building, defense. Like, I was just thumped at StarCraft 2 because I failed to scout. I was building up a big army of roaches, which are a heavy Zerg infantry, basically. And the other guy scouted me out, and he was Terran. he scouted me out. He saw I was building roaches. So he just started cranking out Marauders, which are the new Terran heavy infantry. And Marauders just rip roaches to shreds. So it was just no contest. He blew right through me. And if I had scouted him, I would have known he was building practically nothing but Marauders. I could have built Zerglings and taken out his Marauders. So, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, that doesn't just apply to StarCraft 2. It also applies to StarCraft 1, which also has the same mechanics. And pretty much any RTS, really. If you know what your enemy is doing, you have a big advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm probably in the similar situation as this guy. I have a general interest in StarCraft, but no real experience. And I've loved watching the videos. I mentioned it earlier. Probably my source, other than a few dedicated YouTube users, is gotfrag.com. They have a dedicated section for the StarCraft II beta that they've been posting some good videos to. And you know, kind of along the same lines of scouting, I've only been successful when I make an early attack just to try and knock out some resources, just to slow their economy down, just to put some pressure on people. Because frankly, I mean, it seems obvious, but if you leave somebody alone, they're just going to gather resources and do whatever they want. But it's something a lot of beginner players, including myself, just kind of forget about.
Yeah, and harassing somebody and keeping them off balance is absolutely essential. And that's one of the things I'm terrible at, actually, is remembering to do that. And, cause I almost always feel like my army isn't strong enough to divert it all to attack. It's like, oh, I know he's got like a huge force over there, so I'm not going to attack. But, when I watch replays of my own games, it almost always works out that if I had attacked with what I had, I would have won. So it's also, you know, if I had a better awareness of what the other guy was doing, would have gone differently. And you can't just sit back and let them expand into a new base, and not harass them while they're doing that, because then they just, you know, ramp up their economy really quickly. You have to make them spend on defense. You have to make them, you have to divert their attention away from building up their economy.
So we'd also, if you have a calendar nearby and you feel like writing something down on that calendar, we're just now wrapping up issue number 202, is it? No, it's 201, of course. Everybody has just received the 200th issue, and we've gotten some great feedback from that. Thanks, guys. But the following issue is going to have some nice StarCraft beta impressions and some great tips included in there for you guys who want to get a jump on everybody else and be prepared for day one. So look out for that in a few weeks.
And including some like detailed unit-by-unit strategy tips.
Yeah, we've got tips from the pros and sort of like the pros and cons of every unit in the game. It's a great starter guide for anybody in this guy's position, I think.
Hey, guys, I got a question about Mass Effect. I'm just starting to play Mass Effect 1 for the first time, and then I want to play through 2, and I'm wondering about what class to make. I've played System Shock 2 a bunch of times, and I always played as sort of a tech-heavy guy because I like a lot of hacking and lockpicking and that kind of stuff. And in Mass Effect, I'm wondering if I can rely on squad mates for those abilities and just go with a soldier so I can get more into the combat. I don't really care about taking down enemy shields or messing with their weapons or whatever those other abilities are. I really just like to do the kind of technical hacking and lockpicking type stuff. So can I use party members to do that and also to get a little bit of a taste of the magic type abilities and be okay with a soldier, or do I need a main character engineer? Thanks. Bye.
You're in luck if you want to just play a soldier. As long as you have a member of your party with tech skills, and I think in this case it's the decryption skill. Anyone who has the decryption skill, you can level it up, and you'll be able to unlock any locked boxes that come your way, provided they're in your party. However, personally, I'm not sure I'd shy away from playing like an engineer. It's actually probably my favorite class to play the game through. But if you're really just stuck on using nothing but guns, you'd be okay playing as long as you have like Tali or an Kaden, I guess, in your party.
So let's move on to playlist, shall we? Evan, what are you playing?
I think you know. It's been going on most of the day here. I've been pretty. I've been pretty absorbed by it. So we talked about Mountain Blade earlier. I'm playing a Mountain Blade mod. It's incomplete, but sort of like version 0.9. So it's pretty close to complete. It's called Star Wars Conquest. Easiest way to track it down is just Google Star Wars Conquest mod. It's on moddb.com, which is our recommended site for mods. But anyway, so again, we talked earlier about Mountain Blade and how it's sort of an open-ended RPG. And just to specify further, it's probably easier to understand in the context of Star Wars. So basically, every major Star Wars character, Admiral Akbar, Skywalker, Solo, Mon Mothma, those guys, within Conquest, they are given their own ship, basically. And they're treated as generals, but they're also characters you can fight against. And every, there's factions. There's the Hutt faction. There's Rebels and Empire, obviously. And they each own, groups of planets, but every general is sort of enacting their own, desire of what they want to conquest. So maybe Han Solo is defending Hoth. Maybe Luke Skywalker is going after Yavin 4 or something, in his ship. And within all of this that's happening, there's this massive, AI ships going back and forth and trade routes and, smugglers and pirates going all around. You can just kind of fill the role you want to. You can be on any faction you want. You can sort of support multiple factions. You can betray your original faction, whatever you want to do. In the game I'm playing right now, I pledged my allegiance to Jabba the Hutt, which is weird, and it's basically instant combat. So you have like an overworld map. It's almost reminiscent of the Star Trek Online, honestly. You're seeing this like sector space, and there's planets all around, and you're sort of clicking forward. And you can do ship-to-ship combat in that, you click on a ship and you can board that ship, and basically it's your crew against the other crew, and you have blasters and double-blade lightsabers, and most of the Star Wars weapon, hand-to-hand weapons I can think of, honestly. What are those? Vibroblades? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's those in there. And we were talking about the messiness of Mountain Blade earlier, and thankfully, when I think of Star Wars combat, it's extremely messy. How inaccurate stormtroopers are with their blasters and things like that. So that lends itself to that. And it's just fun, like filling a role within that universe, like taking rebel prisoners and selling them to Jabba the Hutt, and or taking captive stormtroopers and then recruiting them onto your own payroll. It's been a lot of fun just kind of interacting within that universe. I'm about to siege Obi-Wan Kenobi's sort of stronghold on his ship right now. So I'll see if I can get through that.
Yeah. And looking over your shoulder, it is not the prettiest thing in the world. The AI is dumb as all hell, but it still looks like a fun playground.
Yeah, that's totally what it is. I mean, it's the feeling of, after you win battles, you're accumulating loot and getting lightsabers and selling stuff and just raiding ridiculous outposts and fighting off Tusken Raiders, attacking Jawa ships for no good reason. Yeah, it's definitely a fun playground to be in, I'm not even really a big Star Wars fan. I'm a much bigger Star Trek fan, and it's been fantastic so far. And it's free, of course, so go check it out.
And Eric, how about you?
Since the drivers broke my World of Warcraft, I've been getting like 7 frames per second on a 5970. Yeah, right?
Can't you roll it back?
I could. I just haven't really bothered yet because I've gotten kind of re-addicted to Dragon Age Origins thanks to my roommate, who is playing through his third playthrough, convinced me to do a second playthrough. So most of my time has gone into that. I'm playing through... I think I mentioned this last week. I had just made my new character, but I'm going through as a mage, and it's incredibly easier. Like, I'm playing through on hard difficulty, and I feel like it's slightly easier than playing through on medium difficulty as a rogue. And it's just so much more diverse. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
But it's only easier after you've already learned all the tricks of combat, right?
So that's true. So I'm kind of biased in that way. And I think I'm really liking this character, so I think I'm going to bring it over into Awakening soon, hopefully.
And Andy, how about you?
I've just been playing Bad Company 2 pretty much every day. It's become my Battlefield 2 replacement, and even more of on a larger scale than that, because I just have been playing almost every night. I try to hit up the PCG servers, but you know, they don't always have a game happening. But I'm always on the Vent channel. I don't remember the numbers for that.
Well, Andy, let me remind you. So our Ventrilo server, if you'd like to join it, it's of course listed on our Facebook page in the info panel. It's listed on our Steam group. But if you're a guy that likes to, if you're right in front of your numpad right now, it is 208-100-40-19. That's the IP, and the port number is 3796.
Yeah, or you know, go to the Steam page, and it's listed there too. And we seem to get we've got a good group, like with Nesbitt and a few other dudes, and we go and we, you know, even if the PCG servers don't have anybody on, we find a good game, and we've been having a really good time. And I just found out that my graphics might have a bug in them too, Eric, and it's been hilarious because do you know those mounted machine guns that have a shield in front of them?
Yeah.
I would go up to one and I would, you know, enter it, and I couldn't see anything, and I thought that was just part of the game. Like, you just have to guess where you're shooting.
It's a trade-off for protection.
Yeah, I was like, well, you're protected, so I guess you can just spray and just hope you hit something, you know? And I didn't understand, and then Nesbitt was like, no, dude, there's like glass right there. You're supposed to be able to see through that glass.
You know, I actually at a preview event for Bad Company, it was set up on Xbox, and somebody was having that exact problem.
Oh my
god!
Like,
oh, that'll be fixed. I'd never seen it happen on the PC though.
Yeah, and I'm guessing it's like a 5870 driver or something like that, because that's the only, you know, variable or something. I don't know, but I was like, oh man, I wish I had that glass, because I always feel like I always need a mounted machine gun, and I look around, and the only one that's around is one that has a shield on it. I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, that game is insane. On three monitors, there's like their Eyefinity technology.
What?
I don't know, like, they've optimized it so incredibly well to work with Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Wait, you're telling me I can do three monitors with Battlefield?
Yeah. And it's super ultra widescreen.
Can you do two?
Incredible. Yeah, you can do two.
Oh, I didn't
know that. If you had two, you would have a line, you know, down your crosshairs where the monitors are separated, though.
Oh, really?
That's true. Yeah.
But with three, you have just side to side and then middle.
Yeah, and that game is stunning. And I don't know how they worked the. They somehow programmed it so you barely lose any frame rate moving to three monitors, and it's really amazing.
Wow, that would be incredible.
But yeah. The trick there is one of those monitors has to be a DisplayPort monitor, right?
Yeah, unless...
That's true.
Yeah, for me it would.
Or you buy like a $120 adapter.
Ooh, yeesh.
Yeah, how many frames were you saying you were getting with what graphics cards on three monitors?
I'm lucky enough to be borrowing a 5970, so that's the dual core from ATI, and I get 110 frames per second.
Damn.
That's like twice as many as I get. I guess because there's two, huh?
I don't know. It's pretty incredible. I'm gonna be sad to see that card go.
For me personally, I've been over the past week. I've been playing a little bit of Just Cause 2. Just haven't really been playing much of the story, just because story seems kind of lame. But
yeah, good man.
Make your own story.
I have been running around breaking things, which is a lot of fun. And also the last few days, I have been playing the build a new PC game, and I did run into a little bit of the classic PC building frustration, which turned out not to be my fault. Turned out to be a motherboard with an old BIOS, or the BIOS was too old to support the new CPU.
Six cores? You're going with six cores? Yeah.
I went six cores.
Nice.
So I finally got it. All you know, I'd been bringing it back and forth, you know, from home in the office, trying to get it to work. And yesterday we finally got it working in the office. Finally got the BIOS updated to the right version and everything set up. And I took it home, and I got home, and I realized I had left the heatsink here. So I had to come back. Under best case circumstances, it takes me 15 minutes each way. It took me an hour to get to, you know, here and back, because whenever it rains in San Francisco, people slow down to about, you know, 3 miles an hour for no good reason.
Yeah, not even rain, just sprinkles.
So yeah, last night was a fairly decent amount of rain.
It was last night, but
yeah, but it it doesn't take much to slow traffic to a crawl. So, but it was worth it because I finally got my new PC up and running. So I'm happy now. I didn't get a chance to play any games on it last night because I was tweaking Windows 7 to just the way I like it.
Playing six instances of Just Cause 2.
Yeah, and you know what annoyed me because I just made the switch from NVIDIA to ATI was I had when I have it set up to an HDTV as my main monitor. And with my 5870 is you know the primary card, so I plugged that in over HDMI, and you know set it to 1080p resolution, 1920 by 1080, and for some reason there was a like 1-inch black bar around my monitor, which was really frustrating. It took me like half an hour to figure out why it was doing that, and you know, I found some forum posters on ATI's forums that were having the same problem, and there was a thing where it's by default it stretches the image or you know squishes the image, which why would it do that? There's no possible reason why that would be a good thing, and not only that, but they really hide the configuration setting to let you fix it. So yeah, that was really frustrating, but now it works, so I'm happy. Tonight I install games and play.
What's going to be the first game?
I'll probably jump into Just Cause and see what kind of frame rates I get in there because before I was hurting a little bit. You know, it would dip down to like 15 in certain circumstances. So I'm hoping to get, you know, at least 30 in most cases. I did benchmark it using 3DMark, and I went up from 14,000 to 20,000. So that's not bad.
3DMark 06.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's just like the super basic settings, because I just have the basic paid version.
Still, that's impressive. Yeah. Should be good to go.
I am very pleased. Please call in and leave us some more questions that we can answer next week. The number Andy will read now.
Yes, it's 1-877-404-1337, and the PC Gamer extension is 724, which is PCG.
Or you can email us an MP3. We also accept those readily. Also, you should visit our website, PCGamer.com, to subscribe to the magazine. You can visit PCGamer.co.uk to read the blog that we are co-blogging with our UK counterparts. You can become our intern if certain qualifications are met. You have to be able to receive school credit for your internship, and you have to be able to come to South San Francisco and hang out with us in our offices. If you're interested in that, email editor@pcgamer.com with a sample of your writing. And so you can also become a fan on Facebook, facebook.com/pcgamermagazine, or follow us on Twitter at PC Gamer. All right, so we'll see you all next week.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Awesome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Andy.
Absolutely. You bet.
See you next week.
Okay.
No, you.
See you guys online.
No, you hang up.
I'll hang up.
Oh, Dan did hang up. Oh, so did Evan.
See you.
Later.
On today's show, the internet explodes with... why can't I speak?